Down to Business with Bobby Kerr on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
So we'll kick things off, as is done every Saturday, by looking at the business stories of the week and indeed the weekend. Delighted to welcome journalist and author Valerie Cox, and also the deputy business editor of the Sunday Times, an American he is too, on the 4th of July. Mr. John Isle also joins us. Good morning to you folks.
Good morning, Bobby.
How are you? And John, let's start with the US, and let's start with the front page of the Irish Times. Planning is underway for a Trump visit to Clare and Dublin in September. And I know this is kind of unofficial, behind, not in the wing stuff, but it does sound like there's something happening here.
It certainly looks like it does. And I guess as soon as we knew that the Irish Open was going to be happening at his golf resort, I think we had to anticipate that Donald Trump was going to pay a visit to Ireland. So this has been all but confirmed by Pat Leahy in the Irish Times, who notes the interesting detail that one source said that Eric Trump, the president's son, had been in contact with Irish officials. So a highly irregular way of arranging a presidential visit by having your son make the phone call. But in any case, Trump is going to be here, and it will be full of controversy, as you can expect, and it will also be full, I think, of awkward moments. What I would imagine officials, diplomatic officials, will be anticipating the awkward things that that Trump might say when he's meeting, say, Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, or when he's going around playing his pro-am golf tournament at Doonbeg in advance of the golf tournament. Now, I don't want to make light of this. He's a controversial president for a reason, not least because he started a war of choice this year, which, as I understand, most people in this country are very opposed to, a war that hasn't been resolved yet and may not be fully resolved by September. So there are some hot issues that are on the agenda, and I just wonder how we're going to deal with it, both politically and as a population in this country.
Valerie, will we see Conor McGregor on the runway at Shannon welcoming him? What can we expect there?
Well, I remember the first time he came over before he was president at all, and we made a total disgrace of ourselves. We rolled out the red carpet. We had somebody with a harp as he came off the plane playing
Michael
Irish
Noonan
music.
Standing on the, on the runway, as I recall.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'd say we'll have a repeat of that. I mean, it does look like he's coming because on Wednesday, when they had a taped speech from him at the ambassador's residence in Phoenix Park, and he said, I think I'm going to come over, and I think I'm going to see it, and we're going to watch Rory McIlroy. Well, I don't know why he's picking Rory McIlroy. Why not one of his own, John Rahm, or someone who's also coming? But I actually think that this is doing a great disservice to the Irish Open. I mean, that competition has been running, well, it stopped maybe during the war, but it's been running since 1927 when it first began in Portmarnock Golf Club. And the Irish Open this year now has been described as a scheduling difficulty because of all the security that's going to be needed. I mean, he's going to take the whole emphasis off the golf and just make it about me, me, me. I think it's disgraceful. I also think it will be fraught with a lot of problems because he's obviously going to go to Dublin and meet President Connolly, who has already been very critical of him, although she did say when she was elected that if she had to meet him, she would. But, you know, he's not going to be welcomed with open arms. Yeah. And to be honest, I think, who needs him in Doonbeg during the Irish Open?
Fair point. John, there's a lot of coverage in all the papers today about the 250th celebrations. A lot of it quite, I suppose, you know, maybe critical of where America's at now. I just picked out one piece by Matthew Hay Brown. I don't know who he is, but he's clearly an American. But he gives a good sort of historical analysis of where America and Americans have come from and where they are today.
Yeah, Valerie makes a good point about what Trump is going to bring to this country. He's already brought that to the United States, and that's a deep ambivalence about his presence in the White House, but also the state of the nation itself. If you're watching any of the scenes from the America 250 celebrations in Washington, it's like a ghost town. And the contrast with, say, the World Cup, which is a huge celebration of togetherness, global togetherness, where you have tens of thousands of people gathering in stadiums and bars and watch sites all over the country, enjoying each other's company.
Isn't it interesting that that's happening in America?
Exactly. And the contrast couldn't be more stark. I have to say, when I see these pictures of the reflecting pool surrounded by chain link fence to keep away so-called Antifa terrorists who are going to rip up the lining of his reflecting pool. I mean, it's extremely depressing, even though I'm far away from the country at the moment, to see that a unique country like the United States has made it 250 years, despite all of the ups and downs. And now the people who should be celebrating that achievement, as well as all of its flaws, feel like they can't really do it, because to do so would be to endorse a president who has a popularity rating lower than any other president in history, as far as I know. So, and he hasn't done that necessarily by trying and failing, but by being as awkward and difficult, etc.
Well, I think the piece says that Trump's progressive critics accuse him of whitewashing American history.
Yeah, and I think this is actually quite a touching piece, because Matthew Hay Brown touches on both sides of America. One thing that he does highlight is, yes, this is the sort of the most divided the country has been since the Civil War, but he sort of disinters the values that the country was founded on, and says it's more important to focus on the nation's principles while not forgetting the flaws. So he says, we're the first nation in human history based not on ethnicity, religion, or caste, but on liberty, equality, and justice, while also noting that this was a country founded on the displacement of the native population and in the enslavement of Africans who were brought there against their will. So he's saying, we have all of this in our history, but we still have quite a lot to be proud of.
Yeah.
And I think that itself is a very uplifting message. And ironically, for the people who call themselves Christians, who are now running the show in Washington, D.C., is a much more Christian way of looking at the country, I think, than the one that they want for the country, which is to exclude people they don't like and to pretend the bad things in our history didn't happen.
Yeah. Valerie, what's your thoughts on all this?
I thought it was very interesting, the whole idea of whitewashing American history. And this gentleman, Matthew Hay Brown, he's a journalist in Washington, and he points out, you know, Trump even banned the sale of souvenirs depicting slavery from bookshops and libraries and that kind of thing. He just didn't want it to happen. And this man, Matthew, goes back to remembering, I don't know if you remember it, the series Roots on television, and that traced the the roots of an American black family from the time they were captured in slavery in West Africa. And the civil rights movement. Now, apparently, an estimated 85% of US households actually watch that. And he makes the point that in the West here, we grew up as kids playing cowboys and Indians, but nobody ever wanted to be the cowboys. We all wanted to be the Indians. So that's very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. No, it's a great piece. It's well worth a read. It's in today's Irish Times. The author of the piece is Matthew Hay Brown, and as John Isle says, it's a very balanced view of the history of the states, and it's, as I say, it's worth a read. Good news, John, or is it good news? But it keeps rolling in. Exchequer reports $700 million surplus for 2026 so far, as the state collects $62.1 billion. Some incredible corporation tax receipts. It just keeps on giving.
That's right. It's a little bit like a psychological Rorschach test, though. You know, how you respond to this is doomed just around the corner. Actually, the results are better than that headline in the Irish Examiner in fact suggests, because the $700 million surplus is only when you count the extraordinary contribution from the Apple court case last year,
which was 13 odd billion.
Exactly. And when you strip that out, actually we're 2.3 billion ahead of 2025. So, and it's not just the corporation tax, even though that has hit, I think, what is it? Is it 50 billion at this point? We're on track for 50 billion. So sorry, we've taken in 50 billion
in the first six months,
months of the year. Corporation tax is obviously a huge part of that, but not to be overlooked, our income tax, which is still the largest tax head, which is up, I think, what is it, 2.2%? Yeah. And then VAT receipts are up 7.5%. That to me is very significant, because it shows that consumer demand and incomes are strong, right? And as long as that happens, as long as that is the case, the domestic economy will be in good shape. Obviously, the exchequer, the public finances, are very dependent on American investment and the sort of what some people call tax washing coming through this jurisdiction. But we shouldn't overlook that a lot of substantial investment has happened, in whether it's data centers, whether it's the expansion of the big tech companies here, and exceptionally the pharmaceutical companies who have been just going like full throttle for the last few years. So like there's a lot of great stuff happening in the economy. What people are afraid of, and I imagine you're going to move on to the next piece that's pointing out all the downsides to this, is that it can't necessarily last, and that we are actually at the mercy of forces beyond our control. And I think that's worth considering how we balance the economy to protect ourselves from that.
And moving on then to Cliff Taylor's piece in today's Irish Times, Valerie. He tells us that the Irish tax figures are so remarkable that the world is noticing. And this brings danger in the years ahead. US economist Brad Setzer, who works for the Council on Foreign Relations think tank, has pointed to the near $300 billion annual profits declared by foreign multinationals in Ireland.
Yeah.
Like, they're eye-watering numbers.
They are. I mean, they are remarkable, and the world is noticing, and that is a bit of a problem. But the tax, I mean, if you even look at the figures, you know, the tax paid in Ireland by the three biggest payers, that's Apple, Microsoft and Eli Lilly, $16 billion a year. I mean, it's absolutely huge money. And they point out in this article that that would actually be enough to buy four nuclear attack submarines. But I think probably the biggest...
We won't be buying them anytime soon.
No, but the biggest issue probably is, you know, what's going to happen in the years ahead. And already there is a piece there from Orla Gavin. She's head of tax at KPMG. And I mean, I suppose all economists are looking for to the future like this. But she's saying that what we need to do is think about budget 2027, and we have to use this fiscal strength carefully. And she said, what we actually have to do is we have to reinforce our ability to compete for investment and talent, including action on employment costs, housing delivery and infrastructure. Yeah. I mean, whether or not we'll actually do that, because whenever it comes to spending money on large infrastructure, children's hospital, for example, we seem to just forget the money is finite. And just waste it. So, I mean, that needs watching.
Well, I think, and another point here, John, I just thought is worthy of mention by Cliff Taylor. He's talking that about our exposure being long debated, and it's very real. Just look at the inflated position of the US stock market. For example, the uncertainties caused by the AI bubble, and consider what a big market fall could mean.
Like, I think
that's very real.
That's right. And and of those top 10 companies that I think contribute something like half of all corporation tax, you have a lot of companies like Amazon, like Alphabet, like Meta that are highly exposed to this AI bubble, if it is a bubble, right? Who are spending enormous amounts of money right now, huge capital investment in developing chips, in buying AI tokens, in building data centers, etc. Ireland is downstream of that. A lot of that spending is coming our way, as well as the tax receipts, right? So it's two parts. It's the investment bit and it's the tax bit. And if that dries up, yes, we are exposed. But I do have to say, I think the multinational economy anyway is, even though it's heavily reliant on a handful of large firms, we have that pharmaceutical bit, and there have been spillovers into the local economy as well.
Absolutely.
We have a developing medtech cluster in Galway that's very successful. We recently had the sale of Finn, which used to be called Intercom, for $3.6 billion. That was kind of an Irish-born and raised company. So the thing that we've always tried to do here, which is develop that indigenous industrial base, there are signs that it's working. There have been, especially among engineering firms, huge transactions in the last few years. So there are valuable Irish companies that if we... I think, find a way to create a better foundation for them in this country. They can help carry us forward through any hard times that are coming.
And we're looking at on Post in another story. It's in a couple of the papers today, Valerie. On one hand, they're seeking to lift the 74.3 million borrowing cap for an e-commerce push. Also then, some analysis by Kieran Hancock in the Irish Times is telling us that on Post is in the red, despite a 2.8 million trading profit and sales of almost a billion.
Yeah, I mean, two very strange articles, really, because we're told, first of all, by John Burns that, yes, they want to have access to higher credit facilities when they need them. At the moment, they have a statutory limit of 74.3 million, which sounds like an awful lot of money, particularly when you see that it was set in legislation in 1983, which is an awfully long time ago. And also on that, well, I'll go to the other one first, Kieran Hancock's piece, because he said Unpus made a loss last year of 180.5 million. Now, this related mostly to a chargeback on their pension scheme. So it was an accounting
charge. Well, it's still
a
real cost. Well, it's still a real cost to the business.
But it's not something that's going to be happening every year.
Yeah, but look at the size of it.
I know, absolutely huge. They made a profit of 2.8 million from its trading activities. And that's very interesting because, you know, obviously, on post old-fashioned services have fallen by the wayside. People aren't posting as many letters or parcels or anything. But I think on post has actually reacted very well to this. And they're making a lot of money now from things like Vinted, where, you know, people have actually gone mad queuing up with
the business has shifted hugely towards, you know, parcels and it's a remarkable business. I think because of its makeup, John, though, the accounts and the finances are quite complicated in terms of what sits where.
Yes, for
and how
sure.
These accounts are presented.
That's right. I mean, one thing that John Burns points out is that the group revenue has exceeded 1 billion for this second year in a row. And if you want to set the borrowing against that, it's an extraordinarily small borrowing for a company that has that amount of cash coming in. Now, the huge pension charge is related to a defined benefit pension scheme. Those just don't exist for most people anymore. No, it's not going away, but really you sort of absorb that over time. It has to do with an increase in retirement benefits that were given to people who have already retired, right? So you have to take that charge on your books, but you're not actually paying it in, you know, coin all at once like that, as Valerie points out. But I think it's interesting what David McRedman has managed to do. Like he looked at this realistically and said, people aren't communicating by letter anymore. You know, we get our bank statements online, et cetera, all the things that would have kept the Postal Service going. And in a strange way, the pandemic maybe saved it, right? By making people accustomed to receiving parcels on a regular basis at home. And we have something arriving at the house at most days, in fact. So OnPost has really changed. It's invested in that. And I think having the capacity to borrow, to invest, to continue this transformation is completely sensible to me, you know, despite the small margins. I don't think we should expect a public service like that necessarily to make a lot of money.
And just a reminder that any loss in OnPost is a loss to the taxpayer.
Yeah, but I think we're well able to bear it with Microsoft behind us.
Yeah. Valerie, can I move you on to Peter Thiel, an article by Sarah Carey in today's Irish Independent, who makes the point that we can dislike super rich mogul Thiel and still think his firm of Palantir does some good. So she's making a kind of a case here for, I suppose, the blurred lines between technology in the military and commercial technology and where they meet.
Yeah.
And as we know, the hotel in Enniskerry has cancelled this conference. They didn't obviously like the sound of it, so he's now looking for a new venue. But what do you make of him and that argument that we need to maybe separate what's happening at military level, but we can't because it really is the basis of all commercial technology?
Yeah, this is a very interesting article, very deep thoughts in it. And it's looking at the ethical conflicts of people like Thiel. And he's obviously come into the news because his conference has been cancelled. Although whether or not it'll go ahead at all now, it's very hard to know. I mean, he's a billionaire. And, you know, he named his company, which is really weird, Palantir, I think that's the pronunciation. He named it after a spying crystal in The Lord of the Rings. It's a magical orb used by the evil wizard. That's a kind of an odd thing to be naming your company after in the first place, you know? Now, the other thing is, Palantir has a contract in Britain to store all their NHS data so that it can be mined by AI to establish patterns and improve health products and all that kind of thing. But Sarah Carey finds this very strange because she said, look, technology is not evil, but it's the uses we put it to. And she gives lots of really good examples
of
that.
And she's given that example of the NHS being a positive one, that they're benefiting and medical research is benefiting from Thiel's company.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And but she says, you know, it's very troubling that most of the technology we have today is coming from military origins. And she gives examples of, for example, somebody who fled to America, a Nazi, and he ended up creating rockets and all this kind of thing. And then the other side of it, where you had, she said, a lot of people in the 60s and that, they were kind of pro-hippie types, and they were tinkering around in their gardens and their back sheds,
smoking weed and all that
stuff. Yeah, but then realizing that the same technology could be used to exterminate populations, you know?
Yeah, crazy.
So it's a very interesting article. And I think, you know, when you read it, it does actually make us think as well.
Sure. John, I don't know if you're thinking about retirement, but if you are, would you be lured by a 7% tax rate to Italy, as we're being told today? In the Irish Independent, Italy offering this incentive now, trying to attract what they're calling, I think it is the silver market, silver economy. In other words, get Europeans who've retired to come and live in Italy in underpopulated places.
Yeah.
And I suppose breathe life and income and spending.
Yeah. It's personally attractive to me, I have to say, Bobby. It doesn't, wouldn't take a 7% tax rate to attract me to the Sorrento coast. The article's really interesting. There are two aspects of it. There's one I find puzzling. This idea of a silver economy. I mean, Italy's problem right now is that they have an aging population, right? It's very top heavy. It's quite expensive, increasing healthcare costs, while these towns are being emptied of young people, not old people. The old people are still there in these towns. So attracting rich retirees, I get it from a consumer spending point of view because people will, you know, buy houses, renovate them, you know, contribute to the local economy through consumption. But unless you're bringing younger people into Italy, right, to support the tax base, et cetera, you know, you're not exactly solving the problem.
The liability would increase healthcare costs
completely.
And all that sort of stuff.
Now, from the point of view of someone retiring, I actually think it's great. And you can see this throughout Italy. We travel there pretty often as a family. You know, we were in Sicily last year. And we ourselves have looked at some of these earthquake houses that you can buy for €20,000 in Abruzzo.
But you'll never sell one on.
No, but you'll never. I mean, and then the cost actually of fixing them up is quite considerable, even if you get them for a euro. But like, it's a wonderful country. It's like such a nice place to visit. But the part where I always get tripped up is having immigrated to Ireland, right, from the United States. I've done this once before. So you have the fantasy of the place and then the reality. So visiting a place for a week or two is one thing. But having to, like, get a plumber, you know, get a plasterer to show up at your house, figure out how to navigate the health system, like, all of that stuff is way harder, right? So the financial incentive is required.
Last quick word to you, Valerie Cox. Will you be retiring in Italy anytime soon?
No, I won't. But, you know, Bobby, you've got to note as well that here in Ireland, we have our own derelict home refurbishment grant. So, you know, it could work out about the same.
Mm. All right. Thanks for a great review of the business stories and indeed some others. Valerie Cox and John Isle, enjoy your weekend.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.